This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It's Monday, May 20th, 2019, the dawn of the Lori Lightfoot era in Chicago. Good morning. Good afternoon, I should say. Welcome to the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We have some sunshine today, a chilly breeze, high temperature in the 50s right now. It's 50 at O'Hare, 48 at the lakefront.
And a down start to the week for the markets. The Noon Business Hour presented by Old Second Bank. Let's get the latest on trading from Bloomberg and Elisa Parenti.
That's right, Rob. Here we go again. The Dow is lower by 91 points or a third of a percent, trading at 25,671. The NASDAQ is sinking 1.33% or 105 points. S&P lower by 18. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index down 0.75%. The tech sector is the deepest in retreat. An analyst says Apple might have to charge customers more for its iPhones as it deals with higher expenses on its imported Chinese products. And companies are taking a stand against Chinese telecom Huawei. The Trump administration has blacklisted Huawei, saying it's helped Beijing's spying efforts. U.S. chip makers, including Qualcomm, Intel, and Broadcom, have told workers they will not supply Huawei for the time being. T-Mobile and Sprint are the rare gainers today. They're both heading higher as the chairman of the FCC says he's recommending approval of their $26.5 billion merger after the companies made commitments, including some asset sales and rural service guarantees. Sprint is soaring 22% higher, T-Mobile up 5%. Back to you, Rob and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, we're going to be talking about what Chicago's new mayor is going to be pressing on in the problems area there and the things that she addressed this morning in her first speech as mayor of Chicago.
And it's Stock Picker Monday. Our resident expert will have his suggestions. He has two stocks to take a look at. We'll have all that and more coming up on the Noon Business Hour.
Making sense of your dollars, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Lori Lightfoot has been sworn in as the 56th mayor of Chicago. Let's talk about what that means for the city. We're joined by Andy Shaw, former ABC7 political reporter and president and CEO of Better Government Association for a number of years. Andy, welcome back to the Noon Business Hour. What did you see in the speech and the to-do list today?
Well, Chris, it's an awfully ambitious agenda, and it's going to be extraordinarily hard to pull off, at least initially, when she's facing a budget shortfall that could be pushing $1 billion. So here she wants to help low-income neighborhoods, low-income individuals, and relieve the tax burden on working-class families at the same time as she doesn't have the dollars to do the kind of things she wants to do. So the real trick is going to be the kind of budget she puts together. She is going to have to come up with new resources from areas that have those resources without overtaxing regular citizens. That's extraordinarily challenging. She's going to have to look at high-wealth individuals, high-value real estate transfers, maybe the financial markets in Chicago, and maybe business for some new dollars. She has to look at where the dollars are and not hit regular people, as Rahm Emanuel did so frequently with his property tax and fee increases. So a little bit miffed as how she's going to do it. But I'll tell you one thing. I know her as a former member of the BGA board. She is smart. She's aggressive. She cares. And I think that she's going to give it her best shot. But the specifics of how she's going to go about improving education, cutting crime, and increasing opportunity, those are all expensive propositions at a time when the city is virtually broke again.
Any other city have these problems and was able to do really making it something good for the residents there?
Well, you know, Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York City, who is now a candidate for president, would argue that he has continued the New York miracle that Michael Bloomberg began. De Blasio will tell you that crime is at an all-time low in New York City and employment at an all-time high and that the city is booming economically, and he has some persuasive arguments. He has a big advantage, however. He has a city income tax to bring in tens of millions of dollars that Chicago doesn't have. He also has, he doesn't have the pension problem Chicago has. So if you back out the pension crisis from Chicago and fill in some financial holes with a city income tax, you have a city that can be as prosperous as New York. Other cities have done well. The big difference between Chicago and the other cities is the same difference that Illinois has versus other states. We have dug the most enormous pension hole of any city or any state in the country by not funding pensions and having such generous benefits. You put the two together, these are enormous holes. She has a huge pension obligation that she is obligated statutorily to fill in the next couple of years, and she has to do it without existing revenue. So Chicago is unique in its problem situation, as Illinois is.
If you listen to her speech, a lot of the notes that she sounded were originally brought up by activists over the Emanuel administration. The call to repair the city's mental health infrastructure got a big cheer, and that had been a big sticking point since those clinics were closed 7 years ago. The activists who are cheering today at Wintrust Arena, will they be still as enthusiastic 4 years from now?
Well, that's a great question, Rob. And here's the big difference between those activists and Lori Lightfoot. She is not an anti-business mayor. Remember, she has been a very successful corporate attorney with Mayor Brown representing a lot of big businesses. She understands that the lifeblood of a city depends in large part on a successful business sector. That is something Rahm Emanuel was very good at. He attracted a number of new corporate headquarters to Chicago. The Loop is booming overall and the environs around downtown. So in that sense, Rahm was a very good pro-business mayor. I think Lori Lightfoot wants to be equally pro-business, and that's a little tricky because a lot of the activists who have supported her would argue that business needs to pay a much larger share of taxes to fund all the services Lightfoot and the activists want. That, to me, is the real challenge here. She shares the social concerns and the human justice concerns that the activists have, but she also is very conscious of the need not to tax the business community out of Chicago. She has to keep the businesses here and continue to attract new ones and expand the job base. And you can't do that with exorbitant taxes on those businesses. So that's where she and the activists will differ. And if she is not tough enough on the wealth sector of Chicago, I think a lot of those activists will be unhappy.
Always great to talk to you, Andy Shaw, longtime WBBM election night contributor. Coming up, a look at what the change in mayor means for the city's business community. We pick up the conversation with Greg Hines of Crane Chicago Business next.
An hour of financial planning each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Let's pick up the conversation regarding the administration of Lori Lightfoot, which is just minutes old, talking about the impact of her proposals on the economy with Greg Hines, columnist with Crane Chicago Business. Greg, welcome back to the program. The inaugural address, as most inaugural addresses tend to be, was a laundry list of ambitious policy goals, but it seems like the ship of state could be dashed on the rocks of a $700 million budget deficit, and that's the optimistic projection for how deep that budget hole is going to be.
Well, you're right, but let's not try to go quite into the toilet quite yet. I just came from the speech. It was a good speech. It was uplifting. It wasn't divisive, which some people might have thought there'd be a lot of us against them. There wasn't. She made a point of reaching out and saying the right things. But as you correctly point out, what the business community, I think, is looking for, above all, is a solution to the city's fiscal problems that doesn't break the bank in terms of uploading their pocketbooks with a bunch of whole new taxes. And Lord knows how she's going to get there.
Would the business community be willing to agree to taxes on large real estate transfers or financial transactions or the financial exchanges if they knew, because their business relies on a stable economy in the city of Chicago?
Stability is certainly something that is absolutely sought by the business community. It won't work for the financial exchanges because they have a different business model. Almost all their trades now are run through computers. They just move the computer and flip switch somewhere else. So that business would go here. The real estate guys are in a more difficult position. But we have already saw under the last mayor, Rahm Emanuel, huge increases in property taxes. We have a new Cook County assessor, Fritz Kagi, who appears to be juggling the things in such a way that the business classifications are going to pay more and homeowners are going to pay less. If on top of that there are huge new additional property taxes, some of which go not just to pay old bills, but to pay for new things like affordable housing, you know, eventually there's going to be a straw that breaks the camel's back. We're not there yet, but it's certainly this administration is going to have to keep an eye on, because if they go too far on the raising taxes, even in the name of stability, it's going to give people an incentive to move.
Item one on Mayor Lightfoot's agenda is doing away with aldermanic prerogative. How is that going to change the face of development in the wards if the aldermanic prerogative is tossed aside?
Well, beating up on aldermen is certainly politically popular. That was the biggest applause line in her speech today. I mean, the people cheered for about a solid 60 seconds. People are tired of crooked aldermen or whatever. We don't know how it's going to play out at the ward level yet. She's taken the easy first step, which is to say that routine things, you know, if you want to put up a canopy on your store, if you want a loading zone in front of your restaurant or a sidewalk permit, those are the kinds of things that shouldn't require an aldermanic veto, she put it. Those should be handled by a bureaucrat downtown, and now they will be, presumably providing less opportunity for unscrupulous aldermen to shake down people. The more difficult question, though, is what you do about zoning, because that's at the heart of what a public official does. If I'm the alderman of a ward, and somebody wants to put up a great big building, you know, and I go to the community groups and the people who vote for me and say, I don't like that, is it really my duty to roll over for a bureaucrat downtown who wants to do it, or is it my job to go and talk to my colleagues and get support for my view to block that kind of thing? That's a little more up in the air. We don't know how that's going to work out. The Lightfoot people have suggested they're going to take some steps in that direction, but not yet. This executive order she's signing today deals with those routine things, but not with zoning.
Greg, thanks for joining us today. Greg Hines, a columnist at Crain's Chicago Business. And up next, an update on the markets. Plus later, Ford is announcing a major round of job cuts.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. WBBM Business is powered by ComEd's Energy Efficiency Program. And from Bloomberg, here's Elisa Parenti.
Rob, we're taking another leg lower. The Dow down 82 points, or a third of a percent, and the benchmark's at 25,681. NASDAQ down 100 points, or 1.25%, and the S&P falling 17. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is lower by 0.75%. And crude futures, which had been in the green, have shifted course and are now lower to $62.67. We have a check of the grains markets. For that, we turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
Well, the cool, wet weather and late poor planting progress has grains higher across the board. July corn up 7.25 at 390.5. December at 405, up 6.75. July beans up 11.25 at 833, with November's up 11 at 858.5. And wheat for July up 19 at 484. Slower plant progress, cool, wet weather, all pushing grain prices higher. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank.
And these are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Markets are losing ground. We'll see what's moving Wall Street. And later, a look at a tech giant that's taken a hit.
Stock Picker Monday, we'll have a couple of ideas from a money pro.
Ford is cutting thousands of jobs over the next 3 months.
Lori Lightfoot is sworn in as the new mayor of Chicago and is set to rein in some of the power enjoyed by individual aldermen.
WBBM Market Watch. The markets are staging a bit of a comeback, but there's still a negative territory. The Dow is down just 56 points now. The NASDAQ is down 92. The S&P 500 down 14.
Partly sunny, a chilly breeze today. High temperature of 55. Currently 50 at O'Hare at 12:31.
And Ford says it will eliminate 7,000 jobs by August, including hundreds this week. Let's get the details from John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline.tv based in Detroit. John, welcome back to the program. Is this part of the larger restructuring that had been taking place at Ford?
Yeah, it really is. You know, Ford's been sort of dragging this out instead of ripping the Band-Aid off all at once. It's taking it step by step. Ford's not the only one, though. A lot of automakers are doing it. GM recently downsized its workforce. We're seeing BMW restructure, Audi restructuring, Mercedes making big changes. It's a global phenomenon right now. Automakers, even though business isn't that bad right now, they're really trying to get into fighting shape because they do think things are going to slow down.
So this is just simply preparing for the rainy day?
It really is. You know, the Chinese market has slowed down way more than anybody expected. That was a good source of profits for the industry. Europe, the whole European market is essentially going nowhere. Latin America is very weak. Really, the strongest market in the world has been the U.S. market, and now it's starting to slow down somewhat. So this is just a precautionary measure that automakers are taking.
And the employees that are being downsized or laid off, these are white-collar employees and not the factory line workers?
That's exactly right. The good news for them is labor markets are so tight, and especially if you have any sort of technical skill, boy, the demand is sky high. I would think that most of these people are going to be able to find jobs relatively easily.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. John McElroy, automotive industry analyst and host of Autoline TV based in Detroit.
WBBM News Time, 12:32. The News Watch continues.
And the markets are slumping today. We're joined now by Vahan Janjigian, Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management based in Greenwich, Connecticut. Vahan, it sounds like the Google-Huawei divorce is really weighing on the markets this Monday afternoon.
Yeah, it sure is. You know, we've been in a situation now where the markets have been quite volatile and moving up and down based on the latest trade news. And this is just another example of what's going on. And it's also an example of the U.S. Somewhat shooting itself in the foot. You know, I think that President Trump is right about doing something to prevent China from stealing our technologies and spying on us and all that kind of stuff. but the actions that he's taking now are really hurting American companies as well.
Yeah, Ford is cutting 7,000 jobs by August, including 900 this week. Can it be done that quickly?
Well, it's not going to be done quickly. I mean, Ford has been going through a restructuring for quite some time, but Ford is really positioning itself really well for a rebound that will eventually take place. You know, this is a company that still has very strong cash flows. It has a very generous dividend. I believe it's close to 7%. Or 6%, and it's a great stock to hold for the long term because I think eventually things will turn around. I mean, Ford has pretty much stopped producing unprofitable vehicles and is really focusing on trucks, and that's a very profitable market for them.
So, if you invested in it right now, you might get a little extra there. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. It is a stock that that I hold in my portfolios. I had added quite a bit when it was in the low nines. I'm still holding on to it. I do expect it to go higher. My analysis indicates that the car business alone, the vehicle business alone, is probably worth about $14 a share. And it also has a financing business that's worth at least a couple of dollars a share. So I think Ford is a hold until it gets up into the mid-teens at least.
Going back to Google and Huawei and the end of their technology sharing agreement, what are the ripple effects through the tech world? How immediate and how long-lasting will they be?
Well, they're very immediate. How long-lasting they will be remains to be seen. But, you know, for example, there is a stock that I've got my eye on called MKS Instruments. This is a company that makes instruments that are used by semiconductor manufacturers, and it's getting hit quite hard today. The ticker symbol is MKSI. But this is a stock that I think will do well once these trade issues are overcome and worked out. So it's a stock that I've been adding to my portfolios today based on the weakness that I'm seeing, all caused by this Huawei controversy. So it is an immediate reaction. We're seeing quite a bit of a sell-off. How long-lasting it will depend on when China and the U.S. Come to some agreement.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Vahan Vanjanjigian, Chief Investment Officer at Greenwich Wealth Management, based in Greenwich, Connecticut.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Google is cutting ties with Huawei, signaling major trouble for the Chinese mega firm. We're joined by Mark Bergen, technology reporter at Bloomberg, based in San Francisco. Mark, tell us a little bit about the divorce between Google and Huawei. How long had they been working together, and what was really the breaking point in their relationship?
Sure. So Huawei is the second largest seller of smartphones in the world. So it's Samsung and then Huawei and Apple. Everyone but Apple uses the software from Google, the Android open source software. So Huawei has been pretty close with Google. In 2015, they made this, what's called a Nexus phone, that was sort of a Google-branded device. So the break has been a lot to do with the trade war, and then what we saw over this weekend with the Trump administration included Huawei on the sort of banned entity list. And so it says American suppliers, mostly for hardware and chips components, can no longer provide to Huawei. And that includes Google providing what is sort of the, let's say, like the very advanced and robust version of its mobile software.
Well, now, what about other countries? Is the same thing happening?
So right now this has been limited to the U.S., and you know this has been a very a bold political move from the Trump administration, and so this also applies to, you know, if you go out and buy a Huawei store, or go out and buy a Huawei phone, it runs with, you know, it has a Google Gmail, it has Maps, it has YouTube, it has the App Store, all these services that you know, that give Google this huge reach and really support its advertising business. So going forward, that's not going to be possible.
Now, was there any concern? You mentioned that they use Google's open source software, so there's not a whole lot of, or maybe there is. Is there proprietary information inside that open source software that could then be pirated and passed around?
So I think Google has a lot less control over that. That's something that, you know, in China, Google doesn't operate, and so companies use this open source version, and that's what Huawei uses for its phone selling in China. But, you know, the Chinese consumers are not used to it. They don't have access to Gmail, YouTube, Google Maps. They have their own sort of ecosystem of apps out there. This is certainly the case that, you know, Google would argue that they work really hard to make sure that Android devices are incredibly secure. At least from the as much as they can control. And now if you're going out and buying a Huawei device, Google will say, you know, you have less of that sort of Google having influence over the security of the device.
And how are the markets reacting to both of these events?
I'm sure. So Huawei is a private company. You know, we've seen the tech stocks have been pretty much down. This is not great for Google's business. Certainly, like their mobile devices, and Huawei and Samsung are a huge part of their strategy. The company is primarily a search advertising company, and people they have all these deals where you open up your Samsung, your Huawei phone, and you type in a search, and you get Google results. So it's unclear if that's going to change, if Google's going to have a way to basically keep search and some of its services front and center on the devices.
Well, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Mark Bergen, technology reporter with Bloomberg based in San Francisco. Join us this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday and still to come, our Monday Stock Picker.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It is Stock Picker Monday, and helping us out this afternoon is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter in Hammond. And welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Chuck. What do you have for us today?
My first stock is Progressive. The symbol is PGR. The stock trades for a little under $78 a share. I know a lot of people know Progressive from their television ads. It's a leading auto insurance company. What they probably don't know is just what a quality stock it is. The company is a little odd in the sense that it reports their earnings actually on a monthly basis. So there's a tremendous amount of transparency in terms of the company and its operations, and those numbers have been pretty solid. The company has been putting up very good earnings growth numbers. They've been putting up very good combined ratio has been falling. That shows kind of the amount of profitability that an insurance company generates, and those trends have been very positive. The stock's performance has been good, pays a little bit of a dividend, and all in all, it's the type of company that, you know, if you're concerned about trade wars, et cetera, it's kind of a nice safe haven for investors, and we expect the stock to continue to do pretty well. That's Progressive, symbol PGR.
And when you buy the stock, does Flo show up and congratulate you?
Gosh, I hope not. No, she does not.
Now, the next one is in the energy sector.
It is. And it's one of those sectors, one of the few sectors, actually, where you look at earnings estimate trends, and they've been rising pretty aggressively. By the way, Progressive also has rising earnings trends, too, so that's something in its favor. On the energy side, I think it's probably good to have a position in energy somewhere in a portfolio. And right now, I think Chevron offers a real nice play in that space. The company showed some good discipline in the latest merger war that it was in to try to buy Anadarko. It walked away from that deal rather than to get into a bidding war, and Wall Street liked that. I think Wall Street likes the fact the stock yields around 4% now, so you get pretty good dividend yield on that. Earnings estimates trends, as I mentioned, are rising pretty rapidly, and the stock has been pretty good on a relative performance basis, so I like the relative strength that I'm seeing. And again, as a diversifier for a portfolio, having some exposure in energy is probably a good idea. And I think you can get that in Chevron and get paid pretty nicely while you wait for that stock to strengthen as well. Chevron, symbol CVX.
Where is the Dow Theory right now?
You know, we're still waiting on, you know, it's kind of like waiting for Godot. We're waiting for those Dow transports to really get back to their all-time highs of 11, around the 11,570 mark. And, you know, until you really see transportation stocks show sustained movement, I think this market is probably going to have some headwinds in the near term.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter in Hammond, Indiana. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly.
Sure.
Easy for you to say. Available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
WBBM News Time, 12:55. Business news is powered by ComEd's Energy Efficiency Program. Here's Alisa Parenti.
Chris, the Dow is falling 59 points or 0.25%, NASDAQ down 1.25% or 97 points, and the S&P heading lower by 15. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg falling 0.2%. We do have some rare gainers in T-Mobile and Sprint. Afterward, the chair of the FCC is approving their $26.5 billion merger. The companies do have to sell some assets and guarantee service in rural parts as part of the deal. The promises include the sale of Sprint's Boost prepaid brand, a 3-year build-out of an advanced 5G network, and a pledge not to raise prices while the network is being constructed. So T-Mobile up 6%, Sprint gaining 22%. The trial run between Amazon and Kohl's has gone so well over the last few years, the two companies are expanding their unlikely partnership. Kohl's has been letting Amazon customers return packages at stores in Chicago and L.A. Now they're expanding the service to 1,150 more Kohl's stores. And at 200 Kohl's stores, Amazon's devices will be featured. Target has rolled out a Vineyard Vines collection, and buyers have been snapping up the lower-priced versions of the upmarket brand. The tie-in is the latest for Target, which has collaborated in the past with a number of well-known clothing and houseware brands. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.